Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Kathleen O, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Friday, February 5th, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 35, the second paragraph, which begins with our first example. We'll be reading and commenting on this one paragraph only. Today's readers are Joanne L., who will be reading the 12 steps, Terry S. will be reading the 12 traditions, and the readers of our text are Dana P., Julie E. B., and Jordan L. The share ID for Thursday, February 4th, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 16,335. That's 16335. This morning's Friday, February 5th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting share ID is 16,342. 16342. Our newcomer greeter for today is Suzanne W., and Betsy H. will be making the announcements. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth edition states, each group has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I'll now ask Joanne L. to read the 12 steps, please.
Hi, good morning, Team Friday. This is Joanne L. from Rhode Island, recovered in Rhode Island. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you, and I pass, and have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you so much, Joanne L. And Terry S., if you'd read the 12 traditions, please.
Hi, visionaries.
There you are.
This is Terry S. in Oregon. Our 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks. I'll pass, and everybody have a fantastic day.
Thank you, Terry S. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. And once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book. We are on page 35, the second paragraph that begins with our first example. We'll be reading and commenting on that one paragraph only. And good morning, Dana P. If you could get us started, please.
Good morning, Kathy. Dana P. here, compulsive overeater, anorexic bulimic in California. Thank you so much for your service and everyone else on the line. Our first example is a friend we shall call Jim. This man has a charming wife and family. He inherited a lucrative automobile agency. He had a commendable World War record. He is a good salesman. Everybody likes him. He is an intelligent man, normal so far as we can see, except for a nervous disposition. He did no drinking until he was 35. In a few years, he became so violent when intoxicated that he had to be committed. On leaving the asylum, he came into contact with us. Wow, wow, wow. I love this chapter. You know, I've heard it said before, but I absolutely agree. I think it should be called More About Relapse. You know, we talk about those things that are coming up to a relapse. And I didn't particularly have this beautiful life, or as it appeared, this beautiful life of everything. He looked normal, right? Everything, it looked normal. My family at home growing up was one of an alcoholic father and a codependent mother, but everything looked normal on the outside, and or it was instilled in us that things should look normal and that we should be in control. And so my history was a little different. But this comes to me, this part about the nervous disposition. And it really stands out, nervous disposition. And I'm like, yeah, I can relate to that. People tell me on the outside everything looks good. I'm calm in my job situation. Every other aspect of my life, things appear to be very calm. But on the inside, there is this percolating, I call it the little animal that's running around, that restless, irritable discontent. And I could certainly go back and point to where that came from. And
if I were to interpret this chapter a certain way, I would say there's the source of the problem right there, my nervous disposition. But it's not. That is not what the problem is. The problem is that I have a broken bridge, as a wonderful fellow has said, but I'm lacking that connection. I have a spiritual malady, And so my solution is not to focus on this problem, if you will, this nervous disposition, this restless, irritable discontent, but rather to focus on the solution, which is contained in this book through these beautiful 12 steps and my creating and or developing an intimate relationship, which I have now with my higher power, whom I choose to call beloved master. I have some history on the asylum, but I'll leave that for another time. And I will pass. Thank you so much for allowing me to do service today.
And thank you for getting us started this morning, Dana P. Okay, so we are on page 35, the second paragraph. And although we do value your experience, we ask that you do limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who would like to share who has not shared in the past 3 days on this paragraph?
Christina J.
Julie E.B.
Roz G. Cornell.
Okay, who came in after Roz G?
Jordanel.
Jordanel.
Lorraine N.
Okay, we'll stop there. Christina J., Julie E.B., Roz G., Jordan L., and Lorraine N. So go ahead, please, Christina J. Good morning.
Good morning to you, too. Thank you for your service. Thanks to everyone on the line. There's going to be some good stuff. There was some good stuff in the earlier meetings, and I could just feel it because this is one of our first examples here, and boy, it's a powerful one. As far as me relating in, like everyone that shared, seems like everybody has this nervous disposition, and I can look back at my childhood, and I don't know if I was born in with a nervous disposition. All I know is that Kool-Aid and all kinds of sugary stuff became something that calmed me and made me happy in a tumultuous household, just an insane place of physical violence and emotional violence and some sexual stuff, just a bizarre existence to start up in as a little infant. And so whether I had one or not, I certainly got a nervous disposition and came forward knowing that food, sugar in particular, and the goodies would calm me down. And today it doesn't work that way. It makes me feel worse. Sure, it'll put me in a coma. It'll put me on autopilot numb, but it will not do the job it's supposed to do. And I really love that we're getting in now to, which we've been through before in this book, but we're looking at this nervous disposition. We're looking at the underlying possibilities that might be driving this person to a first bite because they don't necessarily have a fantastic spiritual awakening. And that was for me, too. I had God, as I've spoken many times on the line here, believed in my precious, wonderful father. He was merely my only father because my real physical father was never available for me. He didn't like me. He didn't want me. So I turned to God as a child. But I learned that I did not depend on God for most things in my life, even though I knew he was protecting me. So, younger, everything was tumultuous. But as I got older, in my 30s, that's when the disease really kicked in. Even though I had a seemingly white picket fence household, I had a good job. My husband had a good job, had the perfect white picket fence family. But I was nervous. And even to this day, I can be anxious when I'm taking on a task. And just an underlying anxiousness that just runs through me. And maybe I inherited that, or maybe I got it and I've never been able to get rid of it. But what keeps me from having to turn to the food today is that I have these steps and the tools and you guys. And if I work those things, I will not go back into the food. I have neutrality around food. That really means nothing unless I work these steps and pray and connect with the lover of my life now, which is God. Got to be the lover, not the food. So if you're out there and you're struggling, get in here and get going. There's freedom, and I was really shocked when I heard recovered on this line, and I have been shocked for the last almost 7 months that I've been neutral around food. So the miracle is waiting for you. Thank you. Love you guys. I pass.
Thank you, Christina J. in Washington. And Julie E.B., good morning. You're up, followed by Roz G.
Hi, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered in Colorado Springs. And I'm just, can so identify in with certain things about Jim. You know, it's easy for a person to look and say, well, no, I didn't have this charming life, but I think it's so brilliant that the people that wrote the big book started with this first example of this person that, you know, things were going pretty good. Things were going okay. You know, it's easy to look back and say, oh, my disease wouldn't have been bad if I had the right circumstances. But that's not how diseases work. You know, all you have to do is spend time with viruses and see. They don't care. And this disease, my disease, compulsive over and under eating, it doesn't care about my background, about my war record, about my wife, my family. It doesn't care about any of that. I just have this nervous disposition. I describe it as I felt like all my nerves were on the outside. And everything in life that happened, I just felt moved around by life. And this started at a very, very young age for me. So it's almost worse, you know. It's like, what? I should be able to look around. And, you know, it wasn't really till I looked around. I was close to 300 pounds and bedbound. You know, he's in the lunatic asylum. So whether you're in the part of the disease where you can do nothing but deride yourself and see yourself as a candidate in the lunatic, or whether you are a person who feels like, oh, I have things together, why should I have this disease? One thing we share in common is this disposition. We talk about the different mental and physical aspects, but here is one of the emotional aspects, this way that life seems to be happening to me. And today, luckily, like in the end of this paragraph, where friends greeted Jim, I've been greeted by friends, both in the rooms and in this room, of Alcoholics Anonymous, of Overeaters Anonymous, worked the steps, and I'm happy to live recovered. This week will be of 4 years. So thanks for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Julie E.B. in Colorado. Roz G., good morning. You're up, followed by Jordan L.
Good morning. That's my dog barking. I'm playing ball with him, so that's a little background noise. Okay. So good morning. My name's Roz G., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Palmdale, California. And I want to talk about that nervous disposition a little bit and my recovery from it. I'm a very well-liked person. I have a charming personality. And just like the man described, I can crack jokes. I can make people laugh. I really like comedy, and I used to be in an improv comedy group in my younger ages. And I, you know, I have a great smile, but I have another side to me that's not very pleasant. And actually, I want to say that's past tense, because thank God for steps 6 and 7 and asking God to humbly remove those. But, you know, my nervous disposition, I don't know if I could be called bipolar. I don't think so. But, you know, something like that, you know, where you make me mad and I'm going to go off, like impulsive anger. And I remember in church, I was in a church group one night and somebody said something that I didn't like, and I went off and everybody looked at me as if I was insane. So I had to look deeply within myself. I had to have the courage to change and look within in step 6 and see that, you know, I'm selfish and self-centered, and when people don't follow my script, I'm going to let them know it. And then when I let them know it and I feel guilt and shame, I want to soothe those feelings with food. It's a vicious cycle. And so today, you know, I have to get up every morning ritualistically, pray, ask God to remove my defects of character, pray that seven-step prayer, and throughout the day, pause. God is in the pause. And at night, constructively review my day and my behavior. And for a couple of years now, I've had to make some amends here and there because I'm a human and I'm always going to display something. But for the most part, I don't get angry at little things, and I look for the good in people, and food is not the answer. God is the answer. I eat what I'm supposed to eat, I weigh what I'm supposed to weigh, and I work with others, and God is at the center of my life. And with that, I pass. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Roz G. in California. And Jordan L., you are up, followed by Lorraine N. Go ahead, Jordan.
Hey, good morning, Kathleen. Thanks for moderating this morning. My name is Jordan L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Gunnison, Colorado, and very grateful to be abstinent and on a meeting with you guys this morning. I too love this chapter. Actually, if I were to retitle it, I'd probably retitle it more about being beyond human aid and insanity, because it really does. It goes beyond just relapse. These pages, I'm not in relapse. I've been recovered and abstinent and neutral around food for a long time. But I'm still very much beyond human aid. I still very much need beyond human solution to the insanity that can still very much creep in easily when I am not in fit spiritual condition, you know? And so I still pay very close attention to these pages, especially Jim, because we'll learn that Jim is was not necessarily down to develop that spiritual life of his right off the bat. It took him a second, you know. Like everyone else on the line, nervous disposition is what jumps out to me for sure. But disposition, I just looked it up, and it's got a definition of like someone's character or personality. But it's got a second definition there of the way that something is arranged, especially in relation to something else. And what that makes me think of is the way that I arranged myself in this world in relation to other people. I was very much one of those people that needed to be either at the top of the heap or hiding underneath it. I could never just be one amongst others, you know, and show up and just be willing to participate enthusiastically. I had to be the leader, or I didn't want to participate at all. and so that's kind of what the nervous disposition makes me think of. And I can still go into that. I can still go into that sort of thinking, or that sort of arranging, if you will. If I'm not willing to take steps 1, 2, and 3 on a daily basis every single morning, I got to turn it over to a higher power. So anyway, thank you for letting me share. That's all I got.
Thank you, Jordan L. in Colorado. And before I take you, Lorraine, just a reminder to everyone, we are on page 35 in the big book, the second paragraph that begins with our first example. I'll be taking some more names after Lorraine. So go ahead, please, Lorraine.
Hi, good morning. Good morning, everyone. Well, I'm just going to join the chorus of Cher's talking about the nervous disposition. yes, I certainly had a life much like Jim's here. You know, I my family was doing great. I had my business. Everything looked good. But even as a child, I had this nervous disposition. And then when I was 10 years old, my mother took us both to our family doctor, and we both went on diet pills. And no doctor in his right mind today would put a 10-year-old on barbiturates, I hope. But there you were, and I certainly couldn't sit still or study or learn or anything after I was on those things. But yeah, so this whole chapter is more about my thinking, which someone very kindly came up and suggested I read the first couple pages and substitute my thinking and thoughts for drinking and drink. The strange mental twist, the great obsession, which fueled my entire life. That is the crux of the problem for me. And Big Book says I'm bodily and mentally different from normal people. The idea, again, my thinking, that somehow, someday, I'd be able to control and enjoy my eating, that somehow, someday, I could have a few bites or a little bit of the foods that my sick mind obsessed about, was the great obsession. It led my life. That obsession and all of its very sad and damaging consequences to me and everyone around me ruled my life. That obsession ruled my life. So 2 years ago, when I was led to visions, slowly over this past year, actually almost a year ago now, February 9th, I got a vision sponsor and went through the Big Book and the steps in about 4 weeks because I was desperate. And that is the key. I knew I was down for the count. My scorecards read zero. I was in my bed every night for months binging when I called her. So the delusion that I'll ever be a normal eater or a thinker is smashed. I am totally surrendering to God over and over and over again. It was my solution. And it was frightening to really say to God, okay, I'll do whatever your will is. It was terrifying to me because I didn't know what was going to be asked of me. But today, I can honestly say I'm a grateful compulsive overeater. I used to bristle, man, when I'd hear people say that. But as sure as I'm sitting here listening to all of the shares and sharing myself, I know that I would never have come to God or have the relationship with God that I have now had I not been born an addict. This disorder brought me to my knees, you know. So I surrender this with the rest of my life every single day, sometimes several times a day. It's a lot easier today. So if you're new on the line, please, my life totally crashed 5 years ago. And I got into AA and got sober. And then I came here and got abstinent. It can happen. If you're suffering, just keep coming here. You can't help but heal if you show up every day and listen. And maybe eventually reach out, ask a couple questions. So, but especially ask God. Thank you. You know, so I'm learning silence is God's first language. So lately I'm practicing silence and listening. Thank you for letting me share, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Lorraine N. And a reminder, we're on page 35 this morning, the second paragraph that begins with our first example. And I'm going to take some more names. So anyone who has not shared in the last 3 days, I will take your
Kathleen
name.
Kathleen W.
Kathleen W.
Anna Maria L.
I did not hear that.
Anna Maria L.
Maria N.
Anna Maria L.
Anna Maria.
As in Lodge.
Okay, thank you.
Jody
I.
D.
I heard Jody E.
Yes. Did you hear Irene D?
Irene D?
Irene D, that's fine.
Okay, Irene D.
Diane B.
Diane B. And take another name. Okay. All right, so Kathleen W., Anna Maria N., Jody E., Irene D., Diane B. So go ahead, please, Kathleen W. Star one to unmute, Kathleen.
Hello. Sorry, I thought I was unmuted. good morning. I'm Kathleen W. from Illinois. And these last couple days, these paragraphs have really helped me in the renewal of my mind, you know, and I need a renewing of my mind entirely. And I need to have a power greater than myself work in me for that renewal. I need work from the outside in and from the inside out. And I am depending upon God. You know, that is the power that's greater than myself. And the fellowship, hearing what I hear in these meetings is helping me to find this renewal of my mind. and I, too, have related so much to what people have said on the line about their background. You know, I came from a family that on the outside we looked perfectly normal and we dressed well and all of that. We had things, but our house was, it was like the violent ward of the insane asylum. And I was one of the youngest of six children in this crazy household. A lot of my brothers and sisters were, you know, teenagers when my sister and I, my small younger sister and I were small. And so we saw a lot of this craziness going on. And I can, you know, we weren't normal. And I think back now about this nervous disposition. I never thought of myself as having that, but I have. I've been plagued with debilitating self-criticism all of my life. And so when I came into this vision and got a sponsor and became abstinent, this really was triggered. I mean, I wasn't using the food anymore to soothe myself of this nervousness and this criticism. And so I've had to work through it. And I'm just, you know, going one day at a time and finding healing and health, but it's taking some work and some doing. And one wonderful thing is I no longer want food to soothe me. You know, I want the truth, and I want what this program has to give me, and I want what my higher power has to give me. So I'm so grateful for that today, and I'll pass with that. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Kathleen W. from Illinois. And Anna Maria N., you're up, followed by Jody E. Go ahead, please. Anna Maria, star one to unmute.
Hello, I'm Anna Maria. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I'm Anna Maria L., calling from Norway, Oslo. I want to excuse myself for my language. I'm not so good in English, but I want to kind of claim my seat. I've been going to this meeting for more than a year, and today I feel to share because, first of all, I want to thank you for the service, and I want to thank you for all that has been shared. And I would like to share about that tomorrow is a very special day for me because 24 years ago, I started in Norway, and on the 6th of February, 24 years ago, I had my kind of breakdown. I had been in Norway for a few months, and I had my total breakdown. I was so desperate in my overeating that I thought of food every waking hour all the time, and I just wanted to die. And actually, and my life in Sweden was totally a disaster. I came to Norway because I made a geographical escape. And then on that day, I chose to between taking my life or continuing to go to OA. And I'm very happy that I continue to go to OA. And in a few months, I will have 24 years of abstinence. And that's for me a miracle, and it's very moving because if I want to share hope with this, because I was so sick and I was so caught up in my disease, and here I am 24 years later, and I have been abstinent, so one day at a time, thanks to the program. I'm very, very grateful for that, and I would like to really share that there is always hope, no matter how dark things seem to be. And the solution is wonderful. It's the big book, and it's my relationship with my higher power that it's the most important thing for me on a daily basis. I was willing to go to any length when I came to OA, and I'm still willing to go to any length. I'm very devoted to the program. I have my daily routines, and my most important thing every day is to continue to have a good partnership with my higher power, with God, because that no human power can save me from my overeating. And I also have a strong desire to share my experience and to help others. And I appreciate very much this vision group. And I go to meetings in Sweden also and here in Norway. So I go to many, many meetings, but there's always something that I can recognize myself in, and especially when the reading from the big book, because the big book is my guide to living, to a healthy living, free from my obsession, and have the neutrality around food, and to work with steps 10, 11, and 12 on a daily basis. So with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Maria, and from Norway. Or Anna Maria. Okay, Jody E., you're up next, followed by Irene D. Go ahead, Jody.
Thank you so much. Good morning, everyone. My name is Jody E., and I'm a very grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater, anorexic and bulimic in California. And I just want to say how very grateful I am for Overeaters Anonymous, for the technology that allows us to hear from people all over the world, and for A Vision for You, which, like so many of us, has been the turning point, and also for the big book, which is also so important to me and to so many people. So this paragraph introducing Jim, you know, I too agree that this part about his having a nervous disposition is very telling. I too have had a nervous disposition. I probably still have a somewhat nervous disposition, but it's so much better as a result of working the steps and abstinence. And why do we have a nervous disposition? Isn't it because we feel separate from our higher power? Because we don't know that how to rely on and trust in a higher power? And isn't that what we're learning here? I believed in God when I came to OA in 1988, but I didn't rely on God. I didn't trust in God. I trusted in myself. And that's a very precarious way to live, to trust any human being, to rely on any human being entirely is a recipe for disaster, because we humans are fallible and frequently wrong. And so we're going to be nervous if that's what we're doing. So these 12 steps teach me how to give up being the actor who wants to run the show to turn my will and my life over to the care of a higher power and to pray daily for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. Do I do that perfectly? No. But as I practice that, as I live in steps 1, 2, 3, 10, 11, and 12 every day, I get a little bit better at it, and I trust a little bit more, and my faith grows. And for that, I'm so very, very grateful, because it saved my life, and it saves my life on a daily basis. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
And thank you, Jody E. I think you're in California. Okay, I have Irene D followed by Diane B. Go ahead, Irene.
Hi, good morning. Actually, it's Eileen D.
Eileen.
From Maryland. Hi, good morning, and thank you so much, all of you, for being on the line and for a vision for you, which really did help me turn the corner in my program, and for all the service everyone gives every day and the thoughtful shares. I've been in program a long time, and I just clicked on Division for You because someone dear who I'd called to make a reach out call a little less than a year ago said, you know, I go to this meeting in the morning, and there's two of them, 7 and 10. So I listened, and I had been abstinent a year, but I was still a struggle. It wasn't white knuckle, but it was still a struggle. And since coming to Vision for You, it's like the food lifted because the spiritual has taken over. The real reality, the reality that I am lost and bereft without a higher power, my God. I am just so amazed. I, like everyone else, so many people, sorry, on the share, I was raised in a happy, boisterous family, but every so often my dad, who had been abused as a child in Europe, would suddenly lose it, and we would run around the house closing windows and doors and trying to keep his rageaholism at bay, and it was just terrifying. And then the rest of the time he was okay. So it was a very strange, happy and then scary time, and I took to food to calm my nerves as a small child. And then I grew up to be, you know, I don't know, just a very type A person, and found that food satiated what I needed, but it didn't really. It never filled the hole. It was a 2-second fix, whereas God is a forever fix. So I am just so grateful that I am here and that I am able to share with you that I'm having a very, very tough weekend. My husband is being buried at Arlington National Cemetery on Monday. Kids are coming in from the West Coast. Keep me in your prayers and thoughts. It's a beautiful honor, but it's a lot to take in. And without program, I don't know what I'd be doing. So right now I'm abstinent and intend to the rest of the weekend. And thank you all for being on the line. And I pass.
Thank you, Eileen B. Okay, Diane B., you're up. And I'll have time for one more share after Diane. So go ahead, please, Diane.
Hi, Diane. I'm Diane, a compulsive overeater, and so grateful to be on the line. And remarkable that people can be on the line and carry out a deed of burying their husband and still be on this line. When I look at this, and so I just want to say how grateful I am for Vision for You. I was turned on to the Big Book probably about 5 years ago. And so when I started listening to Vision, I knew that it was inspired of God, because I truly believe that the Big Book is inspired of God. As I look at this paragraph today, one thing that I noticed was our first example is a friend. And that's what we find in this program, is a friend. Not only fellow friends that stand by us, but also a friend in God. And what he does for us on a daily basis when we turn to him. Also, in Fred, I see the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde of this disease and how it can destroy families and how we can heal from it, too. My thinking for so many years is so black and white and right and wrong, and it's really hard to get to the middle of the gray part, which is important. And some ways to for me to do that is to just be quiet and to keep my mouth shut, because my disease is a disease of perception and obsession. And so sometimes my perception is off, so I have to pause and be quiet. And I'm just so grateful today because this program helps me remember that I need to worship the Creator and not the creation. And I spent a lot of years worshiping the creation of food and not the Creator. And I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Diane B. Okay, we have time for another share, if someone would like to share on this second paragraph, page 35.
Sandy S. from Asheville.
Go ahead, Sandy.
Hi, this is Sandy S. from Asheville. Very grateful for this meeting. Not only was I powerless over food, but more importantly, I was powerless over my emotions and my thinking. And I've been abstinent for many years, and really grateful for that, because to have this thinking and the emotions, which is what led me to the eating, and to have just, I don't know how I ever survived. That's all I could say. And just, I've had tremendous growth in the program where I felt really at one with God, with myself, and then all of a sudden the rug could be pushed from under me. I have no idea why, and that's what happened this morning. It could have been I had the COVID vaccine yesterday. I have no idea what started this, but I just woke up like so overwhelmed without a really good reason, other than something. You know, I have some allergy in my body that just like overreacts all of a sudden, and the eating helped it, but it was destroying me. So I just found this meeting, the last few shares I just tuned in, so soothing. So like everything got simple. I have a nervous disposition because I'm not trusting in God. You know, I think I'm running the show. And I felt myself surrendering during the meeting, especially when people were crying, because it got me in touch with how the pain that I'm not actually feeling right now. But it was so healing. I just felt it was like God coming through for me by me tuning in and sort of like being healed by the voices on the phone. So I just want to thank everyone. And just real important for me, I'm going to start crying about this one. God's delay is not God's denial. You know, so even if for some unknown reason, I'm just so like out of it, just the answer is simple. The answer is simple. Healing is on the way, and I don't have to do it. All I have to do is surrender to a higher power, to know, step two, that there's something greater than me can restore me to sanity, because I sure can't do it. And then just to let it happen. And that's what happened today in this meeting. And thank you, everyone. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Sandy S. in Tennessee. And thank you, everyone, for all your heartfelt shares this morning. It's been a great meeting. And our prayers go to you and your family, Eileen. Okay, so we are going to close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164. Followed by the Serenity Prayer.
So Julie E.B., if you would please read a vision for you.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.